Bloke, session number 16656, reel 3.
Mr. Todd, reel 3.
So, I then went into this US Army MASH unit where I was able to get first better treatment than I had at Hagaru. Hagaru was purely first aid. This one here, they cleaned up the wound and the wrist a little, put a plaster cast on, and they were able to remove the bullet and some cartridge fragments from my left chest. I had had a volunteer to remove the bullet at Hagaru, actually. It was one of our own naval, Royal Navy's SBAs. You could see the black bruise near the rib, but I managed to dissuade him because I don't think he had the right equipment at the time. No, he was quite keen to have a go. And anyway, the American Army removed this, and it reduced the pain considerably. Again, we were asked whether we would. They wanted volunteers to leave to go on a United States merchant ship for Japan. So, I'm sorry. That from that ship, from that the MASH unit, I went straight on to an American hospital ship, the USS Constellation, I think, for about 24 hours, and then they had volunteers who were, felt fit enough to move to go without medical care on this US freighter to Japan. This we did. There was one of the Royal Marine on board, Cyril Blackman, one blinded United States Marine who I've communicated with at odd times since, a chap called Munro, who lives in Georgia, and a few Marines and soldiers. I think there might have been 30 of us altogether, overloading the facilities available on that ship, but the American sailors were giving up their own bunks, and they really looked after us. By great good fortune, we landed in Yokosuka, which is the big United States Navy base there, and I was able to go into the United States Navy hospital. I say by great good fortune because by this time we'd been brainwashed by the United States Marines, and we didn't associate with the Army if we could help it. Some of our people ended up in Army hospitals where they got excellent treatment just the same, but I felt happier being in a Navy hospital rather than an Army hospital. Again, my first billet there was on a stretcher on a large snooker or billiard table. Again, all the beds were full, the corridors were full, the wounded were just flowing in, you know, throughout the day, every day. They Americans made a superb job, I thought. I've been very pro-American ever since because of the treatment we had at that time. So I was lying on my bed and in the ward, when I got onto a bed, that is, off the billiard table. And one of the officers came in and said, right, the following people are being sent to San Francisco. Started calling out the names, and to my delight, one of them was Corporal Todd. So I got out of bed, went over, and I met the real Corporal Todd. Of course, there was another one from the States. It wasn't me at all, so I got back into bed. I thought I was going to have a quick flight to San Francisco there. Another thing I nearly got was a Purple Heart. The Americans award a Purple Heart for anyone who loses blood on the field of battle, and most of these were presented whilst the chaps were still in the hospital beds. And they couldn't take it in at first that they had British in amongst them. But within a couple of days, of course, as the wounded started to flow in from 4-1 Commando, they found out that we were different, but I nearly got one. He stopped at the bed, took it out, and was about to pin it on, and was told not to do so. And for political reasons, later, just before Christmas, all British personnel were pulled out of the American hospitals and moved to the British Commonwealth hospital in Kure, which was very efficient but very Spartan by comparison. When I had my wounds dressed in the American hospital, they had a marvellous vibrating saw which cut away the plaster without causing any problems. In the British hospital, they used the old-fashioned shears, which caused considerable pain. And in fact, to do the dressing properly, they used to give me a general anaesthetic, and which I didn't like, incidentally. But they were very efficient, but I say much more Spartan. By this time, I got used to American food and cigarettes anyway. So I stayed there until I was fit enough to move and rejoined the unit for one day prior to coming home on the SS Empire Fowey, the first batch of Royal Marines wounded anyway. I'd been abroad about 2 years and 3 months, so I was ready to come home.
Did you make a full recovery?
I'd also had frostbitten toes, and I've never really recovered from that point. It took a long time to get the full use back of my left arm. The chest wound was of no concern at all, but I was on light duties with the Royal Marines for some time. In fact, I was the assistant schoolmaster at the Infantry Training Centre for a year, Infantry Training Centre at Limston, which is now the Commando Centre. Not because I was clever, just there was nothing else I could do with in light duties.
One thing we've forgotten to include, I think, is the fact that when you were with the Jamaica before 4-1 Commando, the Jamaica was in action against some enemy ships or boats.
Yes, that was a very interesting morning. This was very early. We'd only just arrived off the Korean coast. We hadn't got our minds tuned up to being in battle, really. And the klaxons went, the alarm klaxons, that is, about 5 o'clock in the morning. At that time, I was captain of the B turret magazine. I'd recently been promoted corporal, and they'd taken me off my ACAC job, and I took over the magazine. I slept on the upper deck anyway, and we were able to see the small dots speeding towards us from the shore. These dots turned out to be 6 motor torpedo boats of the North Korean Navy. Our own weapons were brought into action very quickly. They were engaged first by the 4-inch shells of the upper deck anti-aircraft, and then slightly afterwards, our own 6-inch, the heavy batteries, came in. The MTBs split up into two groups. One group of three attacked Jamaica. The other group of three attacked the USS Juno. The three attacking Jamaica were very quickly blown out of the water. Two of those attacking Juno were also sunk. And the survivor broke off then and started speeding. We couldn't catch him. And Black Swan, who was with us, she could only make about 17 knots, I think, flat out. She went chasing after this one and opening up, but that one got away. Again, I say we were winning all the time then. We were engaging the shore batteries and putting him out of action. But one day we got too close to shore, I think, and luck ran out for some of our people. A shell came in just above K gun deck, which was to the rear of the ship, almost above the wardroom. It was above the wardroom galley, in any case. It hit a spar, sort of 12 foot overhead, and the shrapnel sprayed out over both gun decks. There were about 17 wounded and 6 killed, which we buried the following day. We'd already nearly run out of ammunition anyway, so we had to go back to Japan, Sasebo, for more ammo, and we were able to get the wounded ashore for better treatment. Again, that was rather a nasty night, because I don't know how they managed during the Second World War when they had loads of casualties, but it seemed to me that 17 wounded and 6 dead seemed to flood the sick bay of the facilities. No, the two doctors we had on board, Surgeon Commander Robarts and a doctor, I forget the name of the other one, they were working all through the night, you know, trying to patch these people up. But it was interesting. At least one thing about this, it made me a real Marine. You know, the motto of the Marines is per mare per terrum, you know, by sea, by land, and I was able to carry out both functions during the same tour of duty abroad.
So these actions with the Jamaica were summer 1950?
Yeah, yeah. I say we were already on the station, quite close to Korea when the war broke out. And she did very well. During the Incheon landings, after I think I mentioned earlier that we were woken up by this heavy bombardment and we didn't know what it was all about. Dawn broke and we saw the whole fleet. And then after the successful landings by the troops, I was still on Whitsun Bay, and I saw the captain of HMS Jamaica, Salter, Captain Salter, wonderful man.
I've interviewed him.
Did you? Well, he went past in his pinnace, and I was standing with all these American soldiers and a few other Marines, and I stood to attention and saluted, and he returned my salute. He'd been on a tour around the smaller ships, smaller Royal Naval ships from Jamaica. Jamaica also had the distinction of being the first United Nations ship to shoot down a North Korean plane, a Yak, at the Incheon landing. They shot it down, managed to recover the one of the wheels, and this was presented to General MacArthur, souvenir.
What did you think of the Chinese soldier as an enemy from the soldierly point of view, from your experience fighting him?
They were ill-equipped. At first we thought they were supermen because there were lots of them and they just kept on going. They were much more intelligent in their tactics than the North Koreans, who, frankly, the North Koreans, as we found them in the south, I know that they were tending to disappear quite quickly, but they didn't seem to have any intelligence or military ability, put it that way. Even when we watched them infiltrating just short of the Han River, whilst I was with the raider company, we used to move during the day and hold up at night because we were quite some distance from United Nations forces and we relied entirely on bombardment from the fleet to protect us at night. But during the day, we watched these people trying to infiltrate, and it was just amusing. One of them would watch us from about 1,000 yards and then he would get up and start walking towards our position. When he got close enough, someone would knock him down, of course, and then another one would pop up about maybe 200 yards to the left of that one and do the same kind of thing. You know, and they just didn't seem intelligent. And they also seemed extremely brutal towards each other. You know, there were a lot of too many dead bodies with hands tied behind the backs, put it that way, which was not the way that Western forces should behave. The Chinese, I had a better opinion of them. They seemed to know what they were doing. I mentioned the chap who ran 400 yards almost across the front of two companies. They taken Chinese prisoners. They often seemed to be very happy to be taken prisoner. The North Koreans were very sullen. People who were taken, some of our people who were taken prisoner by the Chinese, were reasonably well cared for, or at least left alone. Some of them were allowed to return back to Kotori by the Chinese. There's one occasion where a wounded Marine was taken almost to the edge of Hagaru before he and left there. And officially, the petty officer of 4-1 Commando, who was taken prisoner, who was appeared to be wounded, though I don't think he was. I think he managed to cover it up. He was allowed to take some of the wounded back into Kotori by the Chinese. With the North Koreans, certainly in the early days, this would not have happened. I think they would just have executed everyone out of hand. And I think even the Chinese, later I read that they were a bit concerned about the North Koreans' behaviour.
What do you feel today about having taken part in the Korean War?
I was delighted to have been able to take part in the Korean War. I think this was the first occasion where the communist expansion was actually stopped. Admittedly, we were not able to take over the whole of Korea, but that was because the Chinese came into the war. But at least the groundwork was laid down. And if you look at North Korea today, which is just an ant heap, a very disciplined ant heap, but short of everything, and you look at South Korea today, which is a prosperous, modern industrial nation, I feel very proud indeed to have had some small part in this. And I can give an example. 2 years ago, my wife and I were in San Francisco in the Fisherman's Wharf area, and there was some young chap at a stall or store, and we were talking to him, and he mentioned that he was Korean. And I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, because I'm here as part of a reunion with the same George company that we were on the road with during the big battle, one of their reunions. And we were sort of celebrating our friendship during the Korean War. And immediately his face lifted up and he said, you were a veteran of the Korean War? I said, yes. And he took hold of both my hands and he said, I would like to thank you very much. He says, it is because of you people that we are able to do what we are doing at this moment. So if all else had failed, I thought just that one thing made it worthwhile. And of course the other thing about it is that those people who were my comrades during the Korean War, British and American, they are still my very good friends to this day.